Everyone, I'm Osama from TU Dresden. I'm also co-chairing this TRE open suit at GA4GH, and with me is Peg. He's at Flashports, and we will walk you through attestation part, which has already come up in a couple of talks already. So we will be going a bit more technical into it and the kind of protocols which we need and what security guarantees they provide. So the relationship to the FOSDEM will be the first point, then giving a little bit of context of the whole design space. The technical background is what I will cover, and then Peg is going to talk about the open source implementation that he's developing for the draft standard. And finally, if you don't understand anything, I will give you just one final point about what this all means and is, as I said, is a bit technical. So together with some of my proponents, we arranged a marriage of TLS working group with the RATS working group, the remote attestation part. And the story goes like this, that RATS was ready to accept anything because, as I mentioned before, the diversion attacks, if you don't have any connection to the TLS protocol, it breaks. So that's, there is no benefit of remote attestation at all. TLS had two guarantees or two conditions, so to say. They said, okay, no protocol change. And you don't need to, and the second one was that there should not be any privacy or security regression. Under these conditions, we are fine with it. So, and then things happened. RATS ready to accept anything unconditionally. SEAT working group was born in the IETF back in October. And soon afterwards, some people started breaking the contract that the two parties had. That was, okay, no change in the TLS protocol. They started breaking out that with the key schedule changes. Relevance to the FOSDEM is that we are providing, of course, like we have already provided free matrimonial services for you, for confidential computing folks here, that we arranged the marriage. And now what we are looking from you as support is to keep this marriage on for living happily ever after, which is the babysitting services. And what these are, I will tell you more technically what these babysitting services are that we need from you. Specifically for open source part, what we are providing, Peg will explain you his the implementation that he has developed. And then I will explain a little bit of the formal verification results that we have. So we provide both open source and for use for the community. Technically, what it means is that we have attested TLS protocol that is a combination or a composition of attestation protocol and the TLS protocol. I can combine it in three different ways, pre, intra, and post. It depends on what point in time the signatures is happening on the, all the claims. Claims from a RATS perspective is any of your measurements and all the things which you put inside that evidence. So pre, intra, and post, I could do TLS handshake before doing TLS handshake, during, or afterwards. This leads to these categories, and there is a technical difference why we need to categorize those from a security and privacy perspective, meaning that other than the security concerns, like what exactly in the stack, in the whole stack is going to change? Is it the protocol that's going to change, or is it the deployment that is going to change, or is it the higher layer other than higher layer from a perspective of TLS that's going to change, or a protocol perspective? The higher layer you have to change in any case. There is no way around that because you have to do appraisal. You have to do the verification of the evidence that you obtain. And other than that, basically you have to see what other things you want to change. That is the protocol and the deployment. That is for doing pre-handshake attestation, you need the CA or the TA to change. For pre-handshake, there are already replay attacks. Back in 2024, we had a paper on this, which was basically saying that if you have pre-handshake attestation, as a reminder, you generate an evidence, you keep using it forever. It can be used in many, many connections, many, many clients, and you don't know exactly what the status of your thing is. Intra-handshake attestation improves that replay attacks, but it still does not protect you from the diversion attacks, which is to say that you wanted to connect to cloud.example.com. What can happen is, I mentioned already in one of the talks, what can now go wrong is that you can be diverted over to anywhere in the world if that thing is secure, or not that thing only. If everything in the world is kept secure, every server in the world is kept secure, you are secure. But if that's not the case, then everything falls apart. which is a very bad guarantee. That's not what we want in confidential computing, right? It's saying that I have to trust everyone in the world to remain secure for me to provide this guarantee over to you, which is kind of just a useless guarantee, that if everyone is secure, of course this is secure. So what do we gain by doing all of this confidential computing? Whole domain falls apart, which you just talked about. Other than that, other than the two attacks, the replay and the diversion one, there is a relay attack, which we recently just found, thanks to Ecker. Like he pointed out towards this, which we then explored, and we found his reasoning to be correct. I will give you some context afterwards. The thing is that when the evidence is not bound to a specific TLS connection, it can be relayed over, and you don't know which server it is coming from. It can be the case that the genuine attester has generated it, but the attacker is pretending and just taking that evidence and putting it into your TLS connection. And that's where the whole thing breaks. You think that you are connecting to this genuine AI agent, was the example that we took here, so any genuine attester, but that's not really the case. You are actually connecting to an adversary, which is the connection that you build. So here is a bit of a technical thing, which is really, really important to understand. And the thing is that I can do the binding at different levels, binding of the evidence to the TLS connection. And at the point the intra handshake does this binding, which is this key, it's the authentication part has not even yet started. The authentication part starts from the certificate message. If you bind your evidence to this intra handshake, which is to say that you want to have these keys which are for the handshake traffic secret, they are basically not sufficient to authenticate that server. You don't actually authenticate it. The second point is that the handshake traffic secret keys are actually meant to encrypt the handshake traffic, which is these handshake messages. Whether you encrypt them or not, it has no impact whatsoever on the security of the whole protocol. They are relevant from privacy perspective, but they have nothing to do with the security. What I did in my formal proof is that I removed all of these brackets, which are very small, shown here. I sent them unencrypted on the channel. Nothing changes. Every security property remains the same, which is a proof that actually they have nothing to do with it, and binding to this provides you nothing except that false sense of security. The ATSE, the application traffic secrets, which are generated at this point in time, are the real one when it is authenticated. The server is authenticated at that point in time. The second thing is that now that is relevant because the secret that you are going to send over at the end of the channel is going to be encrypted with this specific key, a key derived from this specific key. And that's really important to understand, that intra-handshake intrinsically does not provide you the guarantee that we actually need. This is the secret that this client wants to protect and not the handshake traffic. So what we provide is exported authenticators-based solution, and this goes back to RFC 9261, which Cloudflare, Nick at Cloudflare proposed. And the thing is that you build a typical TLS protocol, and then on top of that protocol, you do use these messages, which is the authenticator request, the server as an attester in this case. The client will send that authenticator request, and it will get back an authenticator from the server, which will contain three messages of the TLS, its own purpose, reusing these messages, because it's well tested and formally verified. And these messages then provide, this message in our case will provide you the evidence that the attester has for the case of the server as attester. And that's pretty much my part, and now Peg will explain you the part for implementation.
Going to hold this thing. Right. So, yeah. So I was kind of frustrated also by the bunch of different ways of doing attesting over attestation together with TLS. And so wanting to kind of being excited by the idea of standardization and wanting to kind of push forward on that and started looking at, okay, how would we actually implement this draft? So the implementation that I'm working on is like based on RustLS, and it kind of the kind of key component is that you can export key material, which is this function down here, and that's kind of the important thing which allows us to do these exported authenticators. It's transport agnostic, as in it doesn't necessarily use TCP. We can, with the implementation that the kind of the example implementation is based on QUIC, and supports either one party or either client or server attestation or both. And this work is supported by Cypherpunk Fellowship program. Thank you very much to them. One of the difficulties with implementing this was kind of the lack of implementation of RFC 9261, these exported authenticators. They're not in any of the popular TLS implementations yet, even though it's been an RFC since a little while. There is a Cloudflare have got a proof of concept partial implementation of it. But actually, at the point at which I started implementing this, I wasn't aware of that, which it was a problem not just because there wasn't a library to just pick up and use and have exported authenticators ready to go, but also because of like confusion when reading the RFC and about how it helps to have an actual code implementation to have a very clear idea of what is meant by. How to do things. The other big blocker was needing to it uses the TLS handshake messages. RustLS intentionally doesn't expose these. Most TLS implementations don't. So this really is something, and it even says in the RFC that the implementation of these handshake messages should be done in the TLS implementation, not in kind of application implementation. I would need to fork RustLS or whatever other TLS implementation, which I didn't really want to do. That was a bit of a blocker. Got something together which does kind of does work. It's kind of zooming out a bit to what you can actually do with this right now. Kind of moving from the theory to the practical as an implementer and how we might actually use these. It works well for server-to-server communication where we've got full control of client and server, and the client isn't you don't need to worry about supporting a standard TLS client. Or proxies where we kind of get around this problem by having standard clients go through a reverse proxy where you've got on your laptop or whatever the client machine is got a proxy, and then on the server as well, and meaning you can use a standard HTTP client or a standard HTTP server. I work at Flashbots where we're using a very similar protocol which is kind of inspired by this, but we're not doing all some of the stuff in the RFC, the conceptual message wrappers and the exported authenticators, just for practical reasons, not using those, but we're using a very similar protocol, and we're using this for this Ethereum block building, which we do where we need guarantees that the block building strategy is kind of being done by the rules, which is why we need, in all the kind of orange lines on the diagram, we need attested channels. And what you can't do right now with this is like, obviously browser, you can't, you know, just implement this in JavaScript in the browser. Right now, you know, it would need the standard to be adopted, and then probably in many years before there's a browser API which would allow this. And another reason a blocker, I've been looking at like what a lot of other projects use, particularly like agentic AI. There's like a whole bunch of private AI projects popping up that use attested channels, and what a lot of these end up doing is using like nested encryption, where they, because they want, for example, to terminate TLS through Cloudflare and then So they're like doing a having end-to-end encryption by doing another encryption. For example, either HPKE or noise protocol. And an issue we're having at Flashbots with using this with generally with TLS and certificate authorities is needing involvement of the certificate authority at the moment of CVM boot. So as in, if we've got a whole bunch of these nodes running this running CVMs, and we need to quickly redeploy a fix and take take them all down and bring them all back up. Because you can't have the private key be persisted across reboots because it needs to be generated inside the CVM and stay in the CVM, you're then kind of relying on the certificate authority, let's encrypt or whatever, to do this ACME challenge at the point of boot. And if anything goes wrong with that, in some cases it can be quite complicated and also involving a name server and stuff, we're concerned that that's a kind of bottleneck, and having the TLS outside of the CVM would be kind of nicer, but it doesn't give us as strong guarantees. And so just one more point, it's kind of completely zooming out as to why I am really excited about confidential computing generally, is and why it's relevant to free and open source software is because I think we all love to be able to compile compile open source stuff on our own machines, and it would be wonderful if there was also a way to check that open source software is running on the server side. And I think that's a really exciting use case for confidential compute.
Yeah, so just wrapping it up, that's the takeaways from free and open source perspective. We are working towards open source implementation and open source formal verification, both of which will provide you fine, nice guarantees of what we actually dream about and not just market about. And as a recap, pre-handshake attestation has the problem of replay attacks and diversion attacks, and intra-handshake has the problem of diversion and relay attacks. And finally, that post-handshake attestation is unavoidable. You may want to do attestation at regular intervals of time, or maybe at some point in time after the connection is established, it's unavoidable. You can't say that I do pre or intra and I can live with it. That's not possible because the new use cases like agentic AI that was just mentioned, so and so on, when the workload is actually changing, one-time attestation is just useless. That doesn't provide you any guarantee. So as a final thing, we are requesting some feedback on the draft standard that we have and some community input, and specifically what we would like to hear from this community is there someone in the room who wants the protocol changes in the TLS protocol? And if yes, give us why and show us how this can be secure. These are some of the key references. Of course, you can have a look afterwards. All the resources are here. I really want to thank all the people who have been contributing in this work, from as co-authors with me, as well as contributors, many of them from this community as well. Thanks very much. I would love to hear some of your thoughts. Anyone in the room who wants the protocol changes, let's say, if you don't have a question. So I have a question for you. So anyone in the room who thinks that doing the changes to the protocol, TLS protocol itself, up to the level of key schedule changes is a feasible way to go forward?
Yeah, Osama, I have a question. So I think the answer to your question is probably yes, but also have a, let me maybe follow up with another question. So. Mm-hmm. You have an impressive amount of people here, right? I think it's much appreciated that you have been, you and contributors have been trying to push for this standardization bodies. I think it's a painful thing. Like, can you maybe share a little bit on the meta experience? Like, how painful is it to try to get a consensus with so many different companies and stakeholders? And is there is there light at the end of the tunnel?
There is definitely, sure, okay. So to repeat the question, so what do we see as the way forward, and what are the different perspectives from the standardization body, and how do we see this standardization happening? Not all of the contributors here share the same opinion. The contributors mean that basically they have given us very valuable feedback in the many years of the work that we have been doing, like I think 5 years already. Some of them might have different opinions. So this is only listing the people who have contributed that we consider very valuable to it, and some of the co-authors with me who have written papers on it. But to specifically mention your comment on the different diverse opinions, we do see the light at the end of the tunnel because of this impossibility proof that we have, where I show that even if we do these TLS protocol changes, it's not going to be secure because of this specific reason. The server is not authenticated at this point in time, and doing these changes are avoidable. We can avoid these changes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for speaking again.